Hey guys, welcome back to the Prehistoric Life Podcast, and today we're back with another interview. We have Dylan from Midwest Fossils. There's his Instagram if you guys want to go check that out. He has a lot of amazing content, so please go check that out. So would you like to introduce yourself further?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. That was really cool intro.
Thank you.
Yeah, so my name is Dylan Sheets. I'm based out of the Midwest. And I guess career-wise, I'm an environmental scientist at an engineering company. And in my free time, spare time, every weekend, sometimes after work, I am running around the rivers and creeks and stuff looking for Ice Age fossils all over the Midwest. So been doing that probably about 10, 15 years now. So, yeah.
I mean, how else would you want to spend your time?
I know. I don't know what else is worth doing. So,
one of the most basic questions that I basically just start off every interview with is, what is your favorite dinosaur?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Let's see. So for me, I got to go, man, it's probably a tie between two. I really like Triceratops because that's one I've found before in the Hell Creek Formation, I guess, a long time ago. And then Hypsilobema missouriensis, the Missouri dinosaur. It's like a hadrosaur. So, there's only one Cretaceous outcropping in the state of Missouri, and it's way down south. And there's been scattered mosasaur fossils and some hadrosaurs, some other stuff. But yeah, a lot of cool stuff coming out of there. But probably got to go with that one, I would think.
So you also said that you deal with mostly, I was supposed to say Cretaceous, but that's not right. Ice Age dinosaurs or creatures. We're really dinosaurs anymore. So what's your favorite mammal?
Oh man, that's a tough one. I would say probably the stag moose. So Cervalces, the giant moose. That would be probably my favorite ones. Favorite ones to find, either that or the probably giant ground sloth. But
yeah, giant ground sloth. I mean, those huge claws that they have, I could only imagine finding one of those. Those things are.
Oh yeah. I got one right here. They are pretty big bad.
Wow. But look how big that thing is.
Yeah, this is one of the larger ones on the hand. But
do you know if that one was like where it was in its life? Was it like old, like older? Was it like a juvenile?
Yeah, so this one is definitely from an adult animal, and you can see in this one it has part of the sheath too. So this is the inner claw core, basically. And then so the actual claw would extend way beyond this. For all kinds of digging and stripping leaves and branches and stuff from trees, but that would probably be a full grown adult. And once they were fully grown, that's the Jefferson's ground sloth, and he was probably about the size of a very large rodeo bull, probably.
Because those rodeo bulls are pretty big usually.
Oh yeah, definitely. The sloths, they're just kind of weird shape because you get to the head and it's not that big compared to the body, but it has a huge body, very wide. Very wide hips, center of gravity. So definitely some funky animals.
Definitely. And they were probably not like the slow moving sloths we have today.
Oh yes. They were definitely very, very different lifestyles for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. We had the two main ones in the Midwest. We had the Paramylodon, which was kind of more in the plains. And those have been the ones that are, known for digging burrows and stuff, but and then we had the Jefferson's ground sloth, which was more into the into forested areas and more diverse habitats and stuff. But yep.
So I mean, it's just crazy, man. Because you hear all this stuff about like dinosaurs in the Hell Creek Formation and the Morrison Formation, but you never really hear the mammals kind of get pushed to the side. And I love dinosaurs. Don't get me wrong, but mammals are like, they're pushed to the side a little too much, in my opinion. They still need some recognition because, I mean, there are some amazing mammals that are just being, because, I mean, weren't there like, were they? I was about to say like tigers, but weren't there lions in like North America?
Absolutely. Yeah. We had some of the most incredible diverse megafauna, especially in North America over here in the New World. We had, I mean, for almost any animal that we have nowadays, there was basically an extinct giant version of it. I mean, we had the American lions, we had the giant beaver, giant armadillos, the giant capybaras, even giant owls and giant box turtles. Like It was giant tortoises, just crazy stuff running around. And it was such a short time period that it all disappeared too, which is super interesting to me. Like, we just missed having saber-toothed cats and all kind of crazy stuff in just a span of just 10-ish thousand years. So yeah, that's what's so interesting to me, is we just barely just missed such a crazy time period.
And speaking of saber-toothed cats, I got some molds of Smilodon fangs here.
Oh, very nice. Very nice ones. Yeah, those are some nice little killing fangs there. Man.
And I love how it's just like, wow, this thing's a massive beaver. How do we name it?
Yeah.
Beaver?
Like, yep.
You're right. That pretty much sums it up. But I mean,
yep.
So would you like to talk about what you do? I mean,
yeah, absolutely. So I guess a little backstory and stuff. Like, growing up, I started to get really into fossils probably when I was in like grade school or something, like fourth, fifth grade. But I just really didn't know where to start. I was just started really getting into the Ice Age stuff, but I didn't really think I could find anything around where I lived in Missouri, because we have just tons of limestone rocks. So I think our state fossil is the crinoid, so those little sea lily things. Tons of gastropods, all kind of shell fossils and marine stuff that's like hundreds of million years old, so really old stuff. So I started finding those like in creeks, just wandering around and stuff, but wasn't really aware that I could find like the great megafauna, like mastodon teeth and mammoths and ground sloths and short-faced bears and all kind of this crazy megafauna that basically lived all around us back in the day. But yeah, once I started to get more into that, I joined some local fossil clubs when I was a kid. I had a lot of really nice mentors, geology professors, and just other amateur collectors and stuff that would work with me, and they would take like field trips and stuff. But not a lot of like Ice Age trips. Most people, I feel like, in this area are really into the invertebrate side of stuff. So they really like the going to road cuts and finding like all the crinoids and shell fossils, and the every once in a while I get a trilobite or something out of Missouri or Illinois. But yeah, so it was definitely, I felt like, kind of moving upstream, carving my own way, trying to find Ice Age fossils around here. But I mean, after a few, like I would say a good 10 years or so, when I started getting really serious, that's when I started to get some good spots and realize how much the material is actually around. Yeah, just that's just a little backstory, I guess. But me getting into fossils, I guess.
I mean, because Ice Age was like, I don't want to say the land was the exact same, because it wasn't, but it was pretty much how it is today. It was kind of done shaping as crazy as it was. I mean, so basically there was stuff everywhere, even in like where I'm from South Carolina. So we tend to get a lot of shark teeth and things like that, but we still have like Smilodon, and we have mammoths and things like that here. We got some stags, and I think we had like a bison here at one point. But it's like it's everywhere. You just got to look for it. I mean, we had like rhinos in Europe and Asia. I mean, they're everywhere if you just know what you're looking for, and that's the cool part.
Absolutely. That's, yeah, everything you just said. I mean, yeah, the Ice Age, definitely, like a lot of the landscape is very similar. And a lot of the landscape looks the way it does from a lot of these Ice Age features, particularly in the Midwest with the glacial activity we had. Basically, everything you see like north of like where I'm at in St. Louis and the Missouri River is all glacial activity and moraines and stuff. I mean, the Great Lakes didn't exist like 20,000 years ago, and that just came about from the carving out of the glaciers, and then that outwash would kind of melt and drain down the Mississippi River and stuff. But yeah, I mean, everything, the landscape is shaped by a lot of glacial tills. So a lot of these giant granite boulders you'll see, you'll find, I mean, Lake Superior agates, we'll find them in Iowa. They've come all the way down. We'll find petrified wood from the Fort Union Formation, I think, all the way down here in St. Louis and Cape Girardeau and stuff, that have been washed downstream and stuff and pushed down by glaciers. But yeah, it's just so cool finding something that it's we'll find like a Lake Superior agate or something, like a big one in Iowa. It's like, wow, this came from all the way up north and has been scraped down. Or, but Yeah, definitely. Especially when you drive across Illinois or one of those super flat states. I mean, it's just been completely scraped flat by all this glacial activity and stuff. So, yeah, it is just super cool to me. Just, I mean, thinking about how short of a time it was. I mean, there were several glacial stages, but yeah, definitely a lot of the land we see today was absolutely shaped by the Pleistocene. And a lot of those older rocks have been completely just scraped away, particularly around this area. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what kind of gave it that Great Plains kind of look, is that glacier just basically went whoosh and just made a giant flat place. I mean, it's water, so it's leaving water behind it to kind of fertilize the soil a little bit. So, I mean,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like in Minnesota and Michigan up there, all those ponds and the bogs and everything left behind from just all the glacial activity, glacial meltwater and stuff. Absolutely. Yeah, they left all kind of remnants.
And I mean, yeah, there's stuff everywhere as long as you just know what you're looking for. I mean, even if it's not like millions of years old, because everybody's like, I'm going to go find a fossil. And they're like expecting T-Rex or Triceratops or something. But you get like cave bear and giant ground sloths and things like that. It's still right there with it. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
Not as old, but it's still older than humans. You don't have Triceratops anymore, but rhinos are kind of Triceratops of.
Yeah. Yeah, you kind of fill that niche, don't they, a little bit? But yeah, definitely. I mean, there's stuff everywhere if you know where to look. I mean, yeah, South Carolina, you guys have a great, great Pleistocene history. I mean, shoot, just the other day I guess it was closer to North Carolina. I saw a post on Facebook. Some lady found a short-faced bear jaw just on the beach. And then, I mean, you guys have the Camelot site, the really famous one. They pulled a bunch of crazy stuff out of there. But yeah, the problem is a lot of times, I mean, the sediments, a lot of the fossiliferous sediments, at least around here in South Carolina, really, I mean, they're going to be in these clay beds and stuff. And around here, a lot of those are lacustrine clays. So they're from glacial lakes, kind of at the end of those glaciers and stuff. There was a lot of still sediment, and then it kind of deposited and stuff. In the glacial till, look, those rocks, you won't really find as much fossils. You'll find stuff, but it's usually not as nice. But once you get into like those deep, thick blue clays, blue, yellow, red clay, that's where you'll find veins sometimes of like Pleistocene bones, or more often than not, those sediments are pretty deep. And then the movement of river water and sand kind of just rakes the bottom during flood events and will spit Pleistocene bones out and stuff on the gravel bars or even underwater and stuff too. But just being in the right place at the right time is a big part of it.
That is definitely
for sure. A huge part. But
were you gonna say something?
Oh no, you're good.
No, because I mean, on the beaches, like you're saying, someone found the short-faced bear lower jaw, upper jaw.
Yeah, it was a lower mandible. Yep, the lower right jaw.
So, I mean, yeah, on the beach, it's kind of hard to get that because sometimes you get stuff that washes up, so you just gotta be there at the right time.
Yep.
And I mean, that's just luck of the draw. Maybe you find something, maybe you don't. But there are a lot of places where it's not like that. I mean, rivers or lakes, they're still, they tend to keep things just where they are. I mean, so there's plenty of examples like that. Like, I mean, there's so much stuff everywhere, and it's just mind-blowing to see what you can find.
Oh, absolutely. I think, yeah, that's a great point. The thing, yeah, people don't realize how much of it's there, but you just got to be able to know where to look. So, like, if I was, for instance, let's say in Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio or something, they are great. They have tons of peat bogs and stuff, and there's a lot of peat mining activity. A lot of times when the mastodons, and it's usually mastodon fossils or stagmoose or sloths are found, they're found during those peat mining activities because all the perfect anaerobic activities and stuff of the vegetation and decays over thousands of years, and it kind of just keep stuff really well preserved. So some of the best mastodon fossils that are kind of ever found in the world are found in that that region in peat bogs. If I was in, let's say, Nebraska or Iowa, I would be looking at like a gravel pit or gravel quarry, kind of near where there's some Pleistocene terrace deposits, a lot of the Pleistocene gravel and old ancient riverbeds. A lot of times you'll find, people will find mammoth teeth, bones, muskox skulls coming out of those gravel pits. Same thing in Texas too. But, and then, I mean, yeah, around here, I mean, basically anywhere, if you can get in a good river with good high banks, really cutting down deep, some good clay beds and stuff, you definitely have a shot to find something. So yeah, just kind of playing the field where you're at and looking at geological maps is super helpful too. And knowing what kind of formations or sediments are in your area is really good too. But yeah, nothing beats boots on the ground.
So if anybody's looking for anything, I do suggest doing some research on what's in your area first. Don't go looking for T-Rex in the middle of Florida. You're probably not going to find it.
Yeah.
I want to go find a megalodon tooth and you're in Florida, you're probably in luck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're there. I mean, but if you do go out and do some research on what's in your area, then leave, go out, do whatever, see what you find. And if you do find something, send me something. Maybe I'll show it in an episode or something cool. Who knows? So do you have any like favorite fossils that you found? Interesting fossils that you like to talk about or show off?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. So I guess there's a few good ones. I guess I'll start with one that's pretty unassuming. I found this one. You can see that one in focus. It's a hoof core from a cervalces, the stag moose. And when I found this, I was probably middle school. I didn't know what it was. I thought it was from a cow. And at the time, I kind of kept everything just because it was like exciting to find any bone. So I like threw it in a bin with a bunch of, we find a lot of butcher block bones, like bones that have been sawed, like they could be 50, 60 years old, but, and I just kind of threw in a pile of that. But, later on when I had actually like kind of knew what was up and stuff, I, was going through those boxes and I was like, oh my gosh, that's like a large cervid hoof. So, that's probably the rarest fossil that I've found, well, other than a few other things, but probably one of the cooler things for me is that that cervalces hoof, because I've never seen another one. So that was a pretty exciting one. Let's see, I got my first mastodon tooth I ever found right here. This was a really young one. This is called the fourth deciduous premolar. So this is the fourth tooth the animal gets in its life, and this would have been probably a 3 or 4 year old animal. At the time of death. And you can see it is actually hollow. There's no roots formed yet. So once the tooth is growing in the mouth, it's kind of like a conveyor belt and it's moving forward. And then once they start using it, they will develop roots. As this one, you can see there's no wear on it yet. It is totally unused, but definitely a very, very young animal. But that was my first mastodon tooth. So that was pretty exciting. This one's probably one of my favorites. This is the jaw of a baby Colombian mammoth. You can see the tooth right there. This one have been probably around the same age as that other mastodon. Found this guy on one of the big rivers, just in a pile of sand. But probably one of my favorite finds because my dad was there, my little brother was there, and I don't know. I feel like you really never see. You see a lot of woolly mammoth jaws and teeth and stuff, but. I mean, Colombian mammoths, I don't know that I've seen a baby Colombian mammoth jaw, especially one coming out of Missouri, because Missouri is basically all mastodon and stuff for us. So just because of the environment, I guess. If you go to like above the north of the Missouri River, it's like way flat and you'll get a lot more mammoth teeth out of the rivers and stuff and the gravel pits. And then you'll get some muskox. And right when you go about south, that's when you get all the big hills. And like the caves and sinkholes and stuff. So you'll see almost exclusively mastodon. Like this, let's see, this big mastodon molar I found.
Mastodons are massive.
Oh, yeah. And this one's a little, not a huge one. I mean, it's a four humper. So this is the third molar, so the last tooth the animal gets in its life. And eventually it would just wear this down to just about nothing to the roots, and it wouldn't be able to feed anymore. But yeah, this one probably got stuck. He could have gotten stuck in a sinkhole or just kind of died, or I don't know what happened, but yeah, he was found in a creek bed a couple of years ago. But let's see. Those are really cool. Let's see. I got a couple other ones my buddies have found. Can't beat the little dire wolf jaw.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, this one came out of the river in Nebraska. Crazy mineralization, too. It's hard as a rock. Yeah, super. You can see some wear, crazy wear there in the teeth from the animal's life, crunching bones and stuff. But yeah, dire wolves. The carnivores are really, really rare in the Midwest, unlike the coast. I mean, Florida, you'll see some bits and pieces and stuff and teeth. And then, of course, like La Brea. La Brea is great for carnivores. But yeah, the central states, you really don't see as many carnivore fossils. You might have seen on the news last year, there came a big news article about the Smilodon they found in Iowa. It was one of the biggest ones ever found, I guess, that came out of southwest Iowa, I want to say. So I think they're still working on some papers for that right now. But yeah, it has only one of the savers, but I think they're saying the other one it lost in its lifetime. Speaking of carnivores, I guess, probably one of my other favorite ones is, so this is an ulna from a giant short-faced bear, Arctotis simus. So probably one of my favorite fossils from Missouri, just absolutely huge, hard to even fit in the frame. But, I mean, as you can see, like compared to, definitely bigger than mine, but, and it's missing the, distal end. It actually went out for carbon dating. There's a little piece missing off. So this one's going to be in a paper, hopefully this year or next year, I want to say, on giant short-faced bears coming out of Iowa and Missouri. But yeah, short-faced bears, one of my favorites. But I don't know. It is pretty hard to beat these giant beaver teeth that we get sometimes. I mean, they're basically like the size of a saber cat, saber cat tooth. Yeah, almost.
Beavers are bigger than people.
Oh yeah, these ones would have been crazy too. This one went about the size of a black bear, and they get even bigger than this too. And about this much would be in the jaw. This much would stick out. But very interesting animals because they don't think they lived the same kind of lives as the modern beaver. I don't think they were able to cut down trees and make dams. And they think that's probably what kind of led to their demise eventually, because the modern beavers can influence their environment and create their habitat. Unlike the giant beavers, we're probably more like giant muskrats. But crazy animals. My buddy actually found this tooth in Iowa last year. So that was pretty cool one. I found about this much of one, but they're very hard to find intact like that.
You're talking about short-faced bear. This is some cave bear bones.
Oh, wow.
A buddy of mine gave me.
Yeah.
Shout out to you, Seth, from Fossil Shack. I'm getting an interview with you sometime later. But, I mean, I'm assuming these are some type of toe fossils because they seem a little small to be for like a cave bear.
Yeah, it definitely looks like you got got some from the paw there. Little metacarpal, little toe bone.
I mean,
those cave bears can get pretty huge though. They a lot of their bones are very close to the size of the short-faced bear bones we get around here.
Cave bears and short-faced bears, they were the big thing. People think grizzly bears are massive. Guys look like dwarves. It's crazy. I mean,
yeah, definitely. Those ones would have not wanted to run into them around the campfire back then. Yeah, I think they've done the, I'm trying to remember, some kind of biochemistry analysis on their bones, and it's just hypercarnivore, I want to say, and I don't know. I'm hoping to get the, I know they're doing the same testing on the Smilodon and a couple other pieces right now, so hoping to hear back from some of my buddies at the university about those soon. But yeah, short-faced bears, cave bears, can't get enough of them.
If it's a black bear, you fight back. If it's a brown bear, you lay down. Yeah. What do you do if it's a cave bear?
Well, I know.
Get on your knees and you pray.
Yeah. What do they say? If it's black, fight back. If it's brown, lay down. If it's white, say goodnight for polar bear. But I would assume the short face or cave bear is much worse. So, yeah.
If you see those, just hope.
Yeah, you're kind of out of luck.
I mean, there are a lot of, and like you think about like Smilodon, because you see how massive mammoths and mastodon are, and then you're just like, you got like Smilodon and people that hunted those. You're like, we're a very weird species.
Oh yeah,
we hunted these things. What happened?
Yeah, I know. We went from hunting short-faced bears to working office jobs and stuff, man. But yeah,
there's a lot of history there, and I mean, because it's also not like mammals were just like the only thing here. There was a bunch of other stuff too. Because I don't know about North America, but I know South America had things like terror birds and those things would have been horrendous to deal with.
Oh yeah, I mean it's literally like a dromaeosaur basically. Yeah.
If you have to put terror in the name, I think it's probably something you should stay away from.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I would just like, I don't know what I would do with it, but if I got like a mammoth tusk, I would just have to like hang it on the wall or something.
Oh yeah.
I got like,
yeah. They're hard to store. They're very large and awkward shaped and stuff. I got a few mastodon tusks in the basement and stuff. And they're on the ground in storage. I just can't. I haven't built stands for them and stuff. But
too heavy for a shelf. Too large for a drawer.
Yep.
What do I do with this thing?
I know you can fill up a basement pretty quick with a lot of mastodon bones and stuff.
I would imagine.
But.
Because they were like twice the size of like elephant tusks. So, I've seen like pictures and things from like poachers and things where they're like showing like a pile of like not mammoth tusks. That'd be crazy. Elephant tusks that have been like reclaimed or whatever. And there's like a lot of them and they take up a lot of room. I can only imagine what like a pile of mammoth tusks like that looks.
Oh yeah. Yep, you definitely gotta have the space and the facilities for that. But definitely some crazy variety. I would say like the mastodon tusks, if you see like the super tusker African elephants, like those giant tusks they had, they're probably got pretty close to that. But there was also like a ton of variety. I found like giant curved ones. I found really short, straight ones. But I have never found a mammoth tusk. My buddy in Iowa found a really large one a couple of years back. And there's a picture somewhere of me and him with it. But it's just, I mean, a giant Colombian, just a huge swooping curve to it. Tusks are crazy. Probably the most, I would say, the charismatic part of the megafauna to find.
Much like this little guy I have here.
Oh, yeah, just like that.
Kind of a good ish example how the tusk curves like that.
Oh, definitely.
And mammoth is one of the creatures that has definitely stolen the spotlight when it comes to megafauna.
Definitely.
You got mammoth, you got Smilodon. I was about to say something else. I don't even know what I was about to say. Because people think that the megafauna were a lot less diverse and they're like, you got like mammoth and Smilodon and mastodon and elk, and it's like there was a lot more than that.
Yeah,
you had like lions and wolves. You had the I'm blanking on the name. It's the little thing with the club tail that had like the weird turtle shell.
Oh yeah, the little glyptodons. Yeah,
glyptodons. Yes, thank you. I mean, like those things are pretty weird looking.
Yeah, there's nothing today that looks much like those guys for sure.
I mean. Man. Armadillos?
Well, yeah. I mean, they're a good distant relative to them for sure. But those ones would be cool to find. You're right. The crazy thing. I mean, all like the mammoths and stuff. Everyone knows the charismatic megafauna. But some of my favorite ones is like the ones people don't really know about, like the stag moose and the giant beavers and stuff. I get way more excited about finding a giant beaver tooth than I do a mammoth tooth or something, you know, or a sphagnum's antler too. But there's definitely just so many different kinds of animals than people know, and you can find them. I mean, like a stag moose, there's been a lot of stag moose come out of New Jersey over there too. And I want to say there's been a couple fossils from South Carolina, maybe a premolar or something. So that was like, yeah.
And actually one of mine is, I feel like, has had the spotlight stolen by the mammoth just a little bit. And Elasmotherium,
mm-hmm.
probably the more famous example of this.
Oh yeah.
Woolly rhinoceros.
Oh, very nice. Yeah.
These are some that I got from fossil crates. Probably the camera's mm-hmm. definitely too close.
Oh yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, this one is specifically the Coelodonta.
Uh-huh.
Don't ask me to pronounce the last name.
Oh yeah.
You can't even see it.
Uh-huh.
You kind of see it here.
Oh yeah, no, super good quality, definitely.
But I mean, there's a little model of one.
Mm-hmm.
But they're found in Eurasia. If you don't know what that means, it's Europe mm-hmm. and Asia. Eurasia. I mean, but these things are basically just normal rhinoceros, but fuzzy.
Mm, yeah.
furrier than mm-hmm. normal ones. But I mean, actually, I can move this camera around. I mean, look how cool this thing looks. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Shout out to Fossil Crates too. I mean, y'all guys make good products. They release Mosasaurus and I want to say Megaceratops and Majungasaurus, but we're not going to focus on Majungasaurus. That'll be something else later on. I'll do an episode on that. But they have Megaceratops, the weird big old bump face thing. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that alone, because it's like a rhino without the rhino part. It's weird. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah,
it kind of looks like it shouldn't exist.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. A lot of stuff back then is not would not. I mean, you can imagine what a lot of people thought when they were finding them in like the 1500s, 1600s and stuff, and they find a mammoth skull and they think it's a cyclops or something like that. You know, I mean,
definitely.
Yeah,
like. You know, let me pull up a picture of the Megaceratops, everybody, or Cerops, not Ceratops. If images will load. Thank you. It's being really difficult today. How do I do this? Because if I saw one of these things, like one of their skulls, I don't think I would know what to, like, think of.
Oh, yeah.
Like this?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, oh, yeah. I wouldn't know what to think about if I found that skull. I'm like, what is this creature? Because you hear about all the people thinking of like dragons and things from like the Marco Polo writing, and all he saw was like a elephant. But it's like, you find that skull? What do you believe that is?
Yeah, I don't even. Yeah, that's. I mean, that's what I think the. What is it? The Indigenous Peoples Thunder Beast story was about. I forget if it was. Yeah. The Sioux or whoever it was, but yeah, probably finding these giant bones. I mean, yeah, what do you even think about? Yeah,
because I mean, the Ice Age stuff was, and I mean, the first, like, I don't even want to say indigenous people, just the first people in general. I mean, they lived alongside these creatures, they hunted them, they traveled with them, they herded them, and like had that whatever tactics they used. I mean, so we still have things like, it would be like a mammoth tusk. And I think I heard something about, or somebody told me about a mammoth tusk, and it had like carvings that were like from whenever it was harvested in it. And it's like, mm-hmm. we have human evidence that these things were hunted by us. I mean, mm-hmm. that's crazy to think about.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. That's, I mean, yeah, it's a crazy connection. I mean, someone who was just like us, you know, I mean, they slept under the same stars and stuff, just like a few thousand years before us and stuff. And they had to live with cave lions and woolly mammoths and stuff. That's a great point you bring up about that, about the kind of like carved mammoth tusks and stuff. Cause we don't have as much of that stuff in North America. But there are a few pieces coming out. I want to say I had a buddy that found a stag moose antler that was chopped up, I think, by stone tools. And I think, yeah, I don't know if they're bringing a paper out on that or whatever. But yeah, definitely there's not as much on this side, but Europe has some crazy, crazy artifacts like that. Carved cave lions, carved tusks and stuff. So super neat stuff.
What do you call them? Cave paintings or something in France?
Oh yeah. The, Spain. Yep. Yeah. The, I can't even pronounce it. Chavez club cave paintings. Those are really cool. If I was ever going to get a tattoo, like a sleeve, I would get like those cave paintings probably, but pretty good art.
For anybody that doesn't know what that is, I'll try to pull up a picture. It's basically just exactly what you're thinking. Cave paintings in a cave. That's why they're called cave paintings. As you see, it's the Chavette I'm going to go with. So yep, you can
super realistic.
I think that was a you see like a Coelodonta kind of thing, Elasmotherium looking. You see a lot of the woolly rhinos that I was just talking about. I mean, more woolly rhinos. You got some kind of donkey wildebeest looking thing. I mean, there's a lot of history there. You got, I don't know if that's some kind of elephant. You can tell that they didn't really know what the trunk was at that time, so they thought it was like a weird tusk. I mean, or I'm just assuming because I don't really know what's going on there.
They definitely had the whole landscape. I mean, yeah, they had the mammoths. I think there's aurochs, the early cow. They had the bison, the horses, cave lions, hyenas even. And super realistic. I mean, you can even tell the males and females of the animals too. You can see the sexual dimorphism too. And there's different colors and stripes on some of them, and super intricate detail captured in some of the pages. Crazy for how old they are. I mean, I want to say they're, 40, 50 thousand years old. I forget what it is, but
I would love to go see those.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I'm assuming this is some kind of, what do they call it? Clovis Point, I guess, for like France.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, not Clovis culture, but they're probably one of their great archaeological wonders for sure.
I think Clovis Point is kind of exclusive for North America.
It is. Yep. Yeah, the Clovis culture.
That's probably their version of whatever you want to call their version of the Clovis Point.
Oh, yep. They definitely have had people there much longer than us over here. Definitely. But yeah, crazy artifacts they got. But
I mean, because, I mean, like you're saying, your buddy found something about the stag moose being cut up. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, there is a fossil somewhere of Smilodon, where it was shown being like sport hunted, I think.
Oh, really? Huh.
I think. It might have been.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of mammoth and mastodon kill sites and stuff. There's actually Mastodon State Park just south of where I live in St. Louis. Here was one of the first places they found the Clovis Points with mastodon bones.
I just looked up Smilodon sport hunting fossils, but it's just Smilodon fossils.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just Smilodon. I don't really know what I was going to find, but
yeah.
But I mean, you see, like, I think there was something else in Europe where they found like a human skeleton, and I posted it on my Instagram story. Let's see if I can actually access that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no worries.
Let me actually bring it onto the camera.
Yeah.
Where is it? Right here. Where they found like a snake around a human.
Oh, jeez.
It's like, you know, that person was definitely having a bad day.
Yeah. Yeah.
They definitely. And I feel like that's why, because you can also tell with these fossils how I don't want to say how culture spread, but like how like cultural what would you call them? Cliches, I guess, would appear. How like you have like snakes tend to be representing like evil, mistrusting kind of ideas. Because you see things like that and you're like, somebody sees that, I come across my buddy surrounded by a snake, I'm gonna be like, that creature is evil.
Yeah.
it's killing my friend. What's going on here?
Yep. Yeah, definitely symbols and culture, a huge aspect for sure, for back then.
Another crazy thing is, like, snakes are everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They are everywhere. Even when you think they're not there, I think the only continent they're not on is Antarctica.
And that's about right.
I think that's because, like, nothing's in Antarctica.
Mm. Yeah, like, they probably reptiles, amphibians wouldn't have a good too good of a time there.
You get those northern countries like Canada, you get parts of Alaska, not a country, but a northern state. You got like Russia, Sweden, Norway, Finland, they all have snakes. And it's like, you're not safe from this thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, they definitely at one point were big enough to eat people, so.
Yeah, I mean, they can still eat you today if you get a big, I think it only has to be like 17 foot long or something, I think, to. I mean, every once in a while, I feel like you see like a big reticulated python eat somebody and over in Asia somewhere. But it's pretty rare nowadays, I want to say.
Yeah, we kind of, I don't want to say evolve past that, but we're kind of definitely more technologically advanced to kind of avoid it a bit more.
Yeah, definitely.
You kind of like, snakes are in this area. Maybe you shouldn't walk there. If you walk there, it's probably your fault you're getting eaten. Back then you're like, all right, well, I guess I'm just going to travel this way today. Now I'm in a snake pit.
There's probably a lot more than snakes you had to worry about back then for sure. But
definitely. I mean, isn't that where like the I forget what the actual term is, but like the fear of the dark, isn't that kind of where that comes from? Like our ancient ancestors like not being able to like see at night.
Oh, I'm sure.
We have this like fear of the dark and there being like predators out there.
I would assume so. I mean, yeah, we've been evolving around lions for hundreds of thousands of years. So I mean, lions and leopards and saber-toothed cats and all kinds of large cats and wolves and bears, especially too, probably been eating us for the past few million years, I would say. So there's definitely got to be some ingrained thing in our evolution there to definitely have a natural fear of the dark, and probably what makes us so sociable, I would say too, want to hang around other humans where it's safe and stuff, and hanging around the campfire and not wandering off too far so the short-faced bear gets you. So
Cleveland Clinic, many years ago when our ancestors lived and slept out in the open, wouldn't ever want to do that, not even in modern times. But
yeah,
the dark was very dangerous. Predators roamed at night and our ancestors had to stay aware in order to survive. Mm-hmm. Just like that is, and it's so weird that like even that, like, clearly we don't have like Smilodon and big lions and things. We do have big cats still in America, but they're definitely not as big. But like, they're not here anymore, but we still have like instinct from that time, like from them hunting us to like that, like causes us like psychological things going on, which is crazy. I mean, and it's like hardwired into us at this point. That's such just like a bizarre and really cool
thing. Yeah. No, definitely, Art. We definitely used to have a lot more predators than we do do nowadays. I think one of the coolest ones I've heard of is, I want to say it's called the if you've heard of the Tong Child, the skull they found in Africa. It was, I think they thought it was an old rookery or a den for like a giant eagle. And there's a bunch of small animal bones, and then there's like the small skull of like a young early hominid or human or something. And it's got, you can see in the eye sockets and stuff, there's like scrape marks from like the beak of an eagle, I think. So definitely stuff you would have had to worry about back then.
Yeah, you can where's a good, yeah, this one is close up. You can kind of see like holes where maybe it pecked at and see, like, kind of slashes around. I mean, there was definitely something going on there. And you get things like emus and the moa. They were already massive birds already.
Mm-hmm.
then you're like, oh yeah, there's an eagle that hunted those. You're telling me that eagle wouldn't hunt people too?
Yeah. Oh, that'd be a rough way to go. You're getting eaten by a dinosaur. I mean, that's what they are. So that would be they're pretty creepy. I mean, they'll like follow you around if you like walk outside their pen sometimes, and it's like you look at their legs and stuff. I mean, that thing's literally like a velociraptor, like the legs and the claws and stuff. But
I think I have an eagle claw somewhere.
Oh yeah.
Hang on. I don't feel like I have to find it.
Oh yeah.
Don't remember where I stored it. There it is. Yeah. Actually, I got a better camera.
Very nice. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is very, because I also just have like a velociraptor claw here. So, I mean,
how similar they are. Yeah.
Yeah. That's about, if I put it like right over it, somehow, it's same shape.
Yep.
Same curvature. I mean, so you got birds of prey. I mean, aren't birds of prey called raptors? So, I mean,
literally, yeah.
I don't know how much more evidence you need than that. That would have been a horrible way to go. Because, you know, like, I think there was something in, I want to say Ireland or Scotland, where it was, what do you call them? A falconeer, I guess. You're doing something with an eagle with a crowd, and the eagle swooped down and picked up someone's baby.
Oh gosh, yeah. I do that.
Close encounter.
Yeah.
It's like, I think that's more than a close encounter.
That'd be a little close for me, yeah.
I mean, it'd be, that baby's gonna have some definite trauma growing up. But
yeah, I'll be afraid to go outside by itself and afraid of the sky.
Always watch the sky. I mean, even nowadays, there's stuff still today that comes from those times. Like, let me switch to this camera. Boom. Like this. This is just like a deer bottom jaw that I found, like walking in the woods. I mean, it's not ancient, but I mean, you can still look at it. It's still kind of nasty because it's dirty and still rotten, but you can look at it and tell like how similar it is to like ancient fossils.
Oh yeah, I mean, it looks exactly like almost exactly like the stagnum's jaws I have, just a lot smaller. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like a normal deer that you can like, what I want to say, go out into the woods and find, but because they'll probably run from you. But yeah, you pretty much just locate one in the woods. I mean, you can find things like vertebrae and antlers. I mean, and they're not even like dead. I mean, they're still around. They just changed. I mean, that's the impressive part, is that like people are like, oh well, they hear all this stuff about like megafauna is extinct, and it's like, no, it just turned into normal fauna.
Yeah.
I mean, it just unmegged, if that makes sense. I mean,
yeah, definitely. I mean, the bison's a great example of that too. I mean, I know a lot of them have cow genetics in them now too, that makes them smaller and the horns a little smaller. But I mean, the bison latifrons, the bison antiquus. I mean, I had a buddy that found a skull the other day that was, I want to say 38 inches across, tip to tip. So like just completely different. And even like only a few thousand years ago, I want to say the bison were way, way larger than the ones you see today. So, I mean, ramming cars and stuff, and can't even imagine how much damage one of the big antiquus ones could do.
Oh yeah. No, most definitely. I would not want to run into one of those.
Yeah, you're not taking selfies with that one in Yellowstone. But
I still feel really horrible for that little girl, but it's also like, it's a wild animal. I don't know what you expected.
Yeah, people do that every year, but they never learn. Somebody.
I always feel, I'm always like, oh my gosh, that poor person. But I'm also like, Are you dumb? It's an animal. Why would you go mess with it?
Yep. Yeah, people, I mean, the natural selection.
Yeah, that's one way to put it.
That's back in the day. That's how it would have gone. I mean, there are a lot of bison. I mean, that's the most numerous thing we find, fossil or like subfossil, is bison bones in the creeks and rivers. Just because, I mean, there was millions in one of the plains. So, I mean, we'll go in rivers sometimes. You can't even pick everything up because it's just, broken pieces and all kind of bison stuff. So that's definitely the most common thing we find all over the Midwest.
I don't want to say that bison was the most common thing, but because I don't have really any experience. You're saying that, and I can't back you up on that or anything. I don't really have that experience and haven't really done that research. But I feel like from like modern times, kind of how we see it, how they kind of lived or currently kind of live in huge herds.
Mm-hmm.
I would, and seeing some of the strategies that like people have employed and some other things, like maybe they herd them off cliffs and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That could be part of it. Cause I mean, everything dies in one area. You kind of get just a huge dig site of.
Yeah. Those buffalo jumps. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see why ancient people wouldn't try to attempt the same strategies. I mean,
mm-hmm.
And it's actually crazy because even humans were kind of like the early humans, they were kind of like megafauna.
Mm-hmm.
They were definitely larger. They were definitely, I don't want to say smarter because.
Probably that was our most powerful weapon was our brains for sure.
Yeah, we definitely didn't choose. I don't want to say that we were weak. Ancient ancestors were weak, but we definitely choose brains over bronze.
Yeah, I mean, compared to the megafauna, yeah, we're definitely not.
Compared to, like, what, a silverback gorilla? I mean,
yeah.
It's like, we're probably not winning that fight hand-to-hand. But we're like, I got a spear. I can stand 5 feet away and poke you with it.
Yeah, I mean, spears were great, and once they developed the atlatls, too, if you ever use one of those are really fun. I mean, it's like those little throwing sticks that you have for your dog. It throws the ball. It's sort of the same thing as an extra elbow. All those dart points and stuff would have been great for hunting and stuff, hunting bison, horses and camels and stuff. And I think you've probably heard of the Folsom site. I want to say New Mexico, or when they found all the bison, the giant bison antiquus and stuff, and they had the Folsom points associated with it. But yeah, super, super crazy stuff.
And I mean, it's the creatures there were not that much different than how they are today. They were just kind of larger. I mean, that's why most of them are just like the giant beaver or the giant bison or things like that. I mean, it was just the same thing, but larger. I mean, Even mammoths, everybody like hypes up the mammoth, but it's really just a giant furrier elephant. I mean,
absolutely right.
Crazy of a premise.
That's the crazy thing too, is I mean, an Asian elephant is more closely related to a mammoth than it is to an African elephant, which is really fun. I mean, that's how they're going to, genetically engineer one into a mammoth is what they say, but
it's like a breeding through.
They're going to mess. I think they're going to mess with like, an embryo or mess with like with the DNA, because they can't use the DNA from like the permafrost. It's too fragmented. So they're just going to manipulate, I guess, one and then use some mammoth DNA stuff. I don't know. They're going to put an embryo in like a living elephant and then it's going to give birth to a little mammoth, I'm pretty sure. But I don't know. I feel like they keep changing that technology every year. So yeah, I want to see a mammoth. I'm all for it.
I haven't really kept up with that. So I can't really speak on that. It'd be cool to see one, but I mean, probably not. Well, it could be in our lifetime. It's not that bizarre of an idea.
Yeah, you should check out this company, or they have an Instagram account, Colossal Biosciences. They're talking about bringing the first mammoth calves back in like 4 years. But I feel like a few years ago they said the same thing, and I feel like it was like 4 years ago. So I was like, okay,
4 years our time or 4 years your time? What's going on?
Yeah.
Did you mean for decades?
Yeah, you never know what's going on. But that'd be really cool. I think we should bring everything back. So I want to see all this stuff. But
I mean, yeah, that's another thing. I like, if we do that, I've seen Jurassic Park. I've seen Jurassic Park 2, Jurassic Park 3, Lost World.
Yep.
Jurassic World, Jurassic World 2, the newest one. Let's get some security on here. I mean, I'm just saying, they always have the dinosaurs breaking out. I don't know. Maybe we should just figure that out.
Yeah, probably a good thing to think about ahead of time for sure. But, I mean, yeah, hopefully, I mean, a woolly mammoth, I mean, it's basically just going to be a hairy Asian elephant that they, if they
make. Yeah, that's not an abstract idea. I mean,
but, I mean, once they start getting into the other stuff, like if you started playing around with like an emu or a cassowary or something, and you gave it like a bunch of teeth and claws and stuff, that'd be.
Well, I think there was something about them like just doing like hybrid chicken and basically getting a T-Rex. I mean,
I've heard about that. I mean, they like use the little traits in the embryo and they like turn stuff on and off. And
yeah, it's like
stuff.
Maybe let's build an enclosure before you clone the dinosaur.
Yeah, I love to see one. I'm all for it. But I mean, yeah, definitely put it in a cage. But
let's not release anything weird into the wild. I mean,
Yeah, nothing that wasn't there before.
That's another thing. I mean, how many of these creatures should we bring back, though? Because it would be cool to bring them back, but how many of them, like, because you get things like the dodo and other creatures that went extinct due to humans. So it's kind of like if you bring it back, it probably wouldn't change much. But things like Smilodon, where it went extinct because it couldn't hunt certain megafauna anymore because they had adapted to change. It's like, do we bring that back? Do we bring it extinct? How do we approach this? I mean,
yeah.
That's another thing that people think that, like, we did become the meteor for megafauna, if you want to say that. We were kind of a nail in the coffin, but we also weren't the only nail.
Mm-hmm.
There was things like rising temperature, climate change, predators like Smilodon here. I mean, the creatures were like, we kind of don't want to be hunted by it anymore. Let's adapt and change. I mean, they at like the fangs, I mean, they were built for larger creatures to hit the jugular and go in and basically drown them in their own blood, which sounds worse and worse and really horrible every time I say it. It never gets better.
They were definitely very good at what they were designed for a very long time.
I mean, certain niches like that, it's kind of like, if we don't bring back megafauna, maybe we shouldn't just bring back Smilodon. Or if we do, we put it in a cage with other megafauna and let it hunt, built like a enclosure kind of thing.
Yep. Definitely there's some that would be, I think, a little more better than others. I mean, the woolly mammoth and then like the dodo bird, passenger pigeon, thylacine. I'd love if they could do a stellar sea cow, but I don't know if they could do that. I mean, if you're gonna do a Smilodon, you'd probably have to do a you'd have to get some like Homotherium, which is the really northern saber-tooth cat from like Alaska or something, and try to get some form of I don't even know if you can get the DNA off that stuff, but just to see what the genome looks like or whatever. But yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, it'd probably be in a zoo, but
yeah, I mean that's a
milestone.
Then you have the ethics of cloning and all that, but that's a completely different discussion.
Yep.
Should we clone something for the purpose of entertainment and entertainment alone? Or but it's like, I don't think we just use it for entertainment.
Yeah.
Scientific discovery and breakthrough there.
Yeah, definitely good for a endangered species and stuff. I would think as used for a conservation tool would be great. And bringing back some really recently extinct species would be a good first step, probably. But
get passenger pigeons, then we don't have to send emails anymore.
I know, yeah. Yeah, some of the start baby steps before you get to a dinosaur, you know.
Yeah, I mean, let's get some, maybe a few mammals back up in here a little bit.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe we should start with some herbivores first. I mean, like the whole Jurassic World thing where like people think dinosaurs are boring. They come to the island and look at it like an elephant in a zoo. Okay, first off, who in their right mind would go to a dinosaur park and look at like a brachiosaurus and go, psh, it's just an elephant. I get excited when I go to the zoo and see an elephant.
Still, oh, absolutely.
It's like I still get excited and I'm like seen it like 50 times already. I mean, Are you saying the employees are getting bored? Because I don't know what humans you're talking about.
Yeah. No, I think, yeah, no, I'd say it's hard not to be amazed when you see the, when you see the megafauna. I mean, there's got to be something in our DNA and our evolution or something. I mean, we grew up with these animals and stuff, you know, and Africa is really the only continent that still has most of its megafauna. I mean, every other continent, every other continent basically had a whole diverse range of megafauna that's gone now. So I think it's really cool to be able to see that, even if it's in a zoo or wherever, you know?
I mean, yeah, it'd be cool to study. I mean, also, we still get excited to see, like, models of the bones of these creatures. And you're telling me we would get bored of things living?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I'm calling BS on that.
Yeah, I don't see how it's good, but...
Clearly just a plot point for them to make a giant murder dino, but a discussion for a different day. I'll do an episode on why Jurassic World is dumb. Because apparently calling movies dumb gets a lot of views.
There you go.
I'm guilty of watching those videos too. We all are. But, I mean, if we do bring these things back, like they say, let's start with something like the dodo or the mammoth. So, you know, if it gets out, you're just kind of like, at least it won't eat anybody.
Something friendly, yeah.
I mean, yeah. At least it won't just go around hunting people. That would suck. But, like, let's definitely not do any hybrids.
That's a whole other ethical thing. I think even all of those ligers and stuff usually have a lot of health issues and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know many carnivores they would really bring back other than, like, I mean, the thylacine or whatever. Maybe like some of those like tiger or lion subspecies or something that just went extinct in the past few hundred years. I heard a lot of those, like a lot of the lions around there and stuff, the subspecies were lost because they were bringing them to to fight gladiators and stuff and like the Colosseum and stuff. So they would send people out to go catch all kinds of bears and tigers, stuff, make some poor peasant fight them.
we are the only species that has like just like the stupidity and the intelligence enough to do that. We're so above every single animal that we're going to capture animals that our ancestors would get hunted by.
Yeah,
to make them fight somebody else in a ring.
Yeah,
for our entertainment. It's like.
Definitely would have been alive.
I'm sorry. Pass this by me again. What's going on here?
Oh yeah.
You're telling us we're gonna fight a creature that we've never seen before?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
Like it was somebody's job to take care of those things too. I mean, because I mean, I'm not fighting a lion. I'm good. I'll pass.
Yeah, it would be my favorite, my first choice.
I remember seeing something about a poacher dude that was in Africa. Everybody was getting mad at him. He got like attacked by a leopard, and he had to basically just like wrestle it to death.
Oh, jeez.
Which is like, if you're gonna sport hunt like that. You win. You get to keep anything you can kill. I mean, it's like,
yeah.
Dude had his like arm torn open, like gashes, like down to the bone, basically, and he just basically just put knee on its stomach and then just choked it. It's like,
wow,
you win. Nobody's messing with you.
I know. It must have been a little bit of a smaller one, I would think. But jeez, that's a good way to get done. Man.
It was like a leopard or something, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So they weren't – leopards aren't – they're not small. They're way bigger than house cats, but they're not the largest cats.
If you're going to fight one, I'd rather fight a leopard than a lion for sure.
I'd rather fight a house cat.
Well, there's some pretty nasty house cats I've met. I don't know. But
what beats a lion or leopard?
Yep. I mean, they act like it too. A lot of these cats that some of my friends have, it's crazy. They'll hunt you and stuff and – yeah,
cats are definitely they're still domesticated, but they're a lot less domesticated than like dogs or horses or things like that. They are definitely still more primal instinct. Give it another
loyalty, yeah, yeah.
100, 200 years, they'll probably be more like dogs, or I don't want to say more like dogs, but they'll be more
maybe friendly-ish
like dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll in like in our lifetime we'll get to play fetch with cats. Who knows?
Yeah, they need some training for that.
There's some people that like they have cats that are act dog-like. I mean, they're like, my cat's so weird, it acts like a dog. And I'm like, well, I mean, you just domesticated it the same way a dog. I mean, at this point, I don't want to say we don't have a use for cats, but for like the domestication purpose of catching small rodents has definitely gone down on the tier list.
Yeah,
for what they're used for.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Some people still use them for that. I mean, I know people who do have cats for that reason, but a lot of people are just like, it's a cute fuzzy animal.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the people who are like, my pet lizard. It's like, that thing's not your pet.
Yeah.
They're definitely still wild.
Yeah. I don't know that he sees it that way, buddy. Yeah. He thinks about crickets and bugs.
It thinks about surviving, reproducing, and sleeping.
Yep.
That's about all. I mean, but I mean, megafauna, I don't want to call dinos dumb or anything, because there were definitely intellectual creatures back then. But mammals definitely were the rise of intellect, because we got more conscious parts of the brain, different parts of the brain that kind of formed with us. I mean, because you have things like the lizard brain. You know, let me see if I can... lizard brain. This is going to be a weird...
Oh, yeah.
I can already see it. It's...
Yeah,
this is the perfect example. Let me actually pull it up now. This is like the perfect visual. How you have like mammals where they get more of the brain. Humans have a more developed brain, but like lizards have like the bare minimum for survival. It's basically like move around, eat, sleep, drink, reproduce, breathe air. It's like the bare minimum of survival.
Yep, getting warm, sitting in the sun. Yep.
Nothing too crazy. Like things like that. I mean, and they're not dumb creatures at all, but they're also a lot less, I don't know how to say it, like, without just saying that they're dumb, basically.
Yeah. Very, very
not really true. They got less brain.
Yeah.
And that's, I feel, part of the reasons why mammals evolve so quickly. Because, I mean, originally we weren't, I don't want to say we weren't evolving, because we were still there with dinosaurs, but they were definitely the overlord, keeping the subservient mammal down, for lack of better visualization. But they were definitely like hunting mammals and things like that, kind of keeping them from evolving to be bigger. But I mean, once they went extinct, mammals were like, that's our time.
They were holding us back for sure. Yeah.
I mean, dinosaurs, to get to like T-Rex was like millions and millions of years. But for like mammals, we were just like, compared to dinosaurs, we kind of just shot up overnight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just so bizarre to think about, that like how long it has taken us to come to existence. I mean, because we definitely just shot up overnight.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, we've all been around, I guess, a couple million years or so. Yeah, I mean, it's a geologic, like, blink of an eye, I want to say.
Pretty much. I mean, I think somebody said, like, an example, like, you hold your arms out to the side. I can't even do it in frame. And, like, your part of your fingernail is, like, humanity.
Oh, wow. I believe it, yeah.
It's so bizarre to think about. It's like, we measure the best part is like, what's one of the most, where did my notebook go? There's my notebook. One of the recent dinosaurs that I wrote about in my notebook that I've been writing about was, where was it? and whoever names these things.
Oh, yeah. They don't do you any favors.
Screw,
yeah.
Screw you, buddy. I have the pronunciation already pulled up here somewhere. Pay to go. What in the world? I assume this is Patao Titan.
Oh, wow.
Patao Titan, which is a sauropod. And it lived in the Albanian of the Cretaceous, which is like, okay, we broke down time periods even more. Let's see how long that time period lasts. Mm-hmm. It's like 113, give or take a million years.
Yeah, geez. It's
okay. Mm. It's like, wow. That's very impressive that it's like give or take all of humanity.
Yeah. It's hard to wrap your head around that period of time. It's crazy.
And I'm going to give everyone watching now a little sneak peek on, it's not going to be the next episode because this will be the next episode. And after this, I think I plan on starting the actual tournament thing I was planning on doing. But here's a little sneak peek. This probably looks like just blank for, it just looks like lines for me. It'll probably come out better, hopefully. And here's a little sneak peek of the Patao Titan, or however you pronounce it.
Mm.
But it's a giant titanosaur. It's not a sauropod, because God forbid they just mean the same thing. But
yeah,
because you have all these little subsections, and mammals are the same way. You're like, oh, this thing's it's a this, but doesn't that just mean this? No. Like mammoths and mastodons, it's like they're so similar. They should be in the same section. It's like, no, it's like, why?
Yeah. Yeah, they might have looked a little similar, but I mean, yeah, super crazy different. They're bones.
And, I mean,
yeah.
I love looking at scientific names too, because it's usually nothing that like sounds like it should be the same.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're like, wolf, and you have like Canis lupus. You're like, it doesn't sound like wolf at all.
Yeah,
wolf would be in the name. Like, one of the people that I follow, they make wooden replicas of everything that you have to build. And I was thinking about getting one, maybe kind of expensive, which I don't blame them. They're really detailed. And they did one for the seahorse, and they sent like an email talking about it. And they're like, hippocampus erectus. And I'm like,
yeah.
What?
Like, yeah.
What is that? And I look it up and I'm like, it's a seahorse. Where did you get this name from?
Yeah.
And you look at it and like hippocampus is like water horse or something. Mm-hmm. What did it mean? I looked it up because I was just like so just confused. So hippocampus, it's taking forever. So it means, it's meaning horse, and campus means sea monster.
You're getting creative with it, I guess. Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay. Like, okay. I can see that. But erectus means upright man. You have like Homo erectus, which is like the first kind of proto human, whatever you want to say, before Homo sapien, where they kind of started to unmonkey, if you will. So seahorse, like the scientific name means like, what did I say, horse, sea dragon, upright human.
Yeah. So, like,
who is naming these things?
Yeah. Yeah, someone's having a good time.
It's like please get a normal name for once. Just call it like Seahorseus.
Yeah, they're not making normal.
And it's like, oh, what is this? Saber-toothed Cattius, Smilodonius. Yeah. It's just something normal before, other than like, I don't even know what the cat one is. What is it? Feline something? I don't even remember off the top of my head. But I mean, you get all these crazy names, and it's just like, I love sounding sounding out a word I've never even thought to pronounce because it's barely a word.
Yeah.
Like typing out a name and it's just like Glyptodon, you'll type it out and it'll just be like, that word's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you mean it's wrong? Did I spell it wrong? Did I spell Glyptodon wrong? And it's like, okay, how do I, what is the autocorrect for it? And it's like, no search.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Every day.
And I mean, that's one of the funny parts of this is Wordle autocorrect. Because my keyboard will do something funny where I'll get like, the prime example is like Krylophosaurus. I'll type it out in lowercase letters and it'll just autocorrect to being all capitalized. It's like, okay, I guess I'm screaming Krylophosaurus at people. So
yeah,
sure, why not?
Yeah.
I mean, and it's so crazy how just magnificent that these like mammals are. I mean, we see them today and we kind of take them for granted that they are existed in a lot of their ancestors and don't exist. And there are a lot of species of megafauna that could have evolved into something, but didn't get the chance to. I mean, it's so crazy to think about. I mean, at one time cows were like four times their size. Now we just harvest them for meat. I mean,
yeah, just eat them. That a thought.
It's kind of funny because we kind of are trying to turn them back into megafauna to get more cow.
Yeah, making them bigger, more
bigger. We need bigger cows to get more meat to get. It's like megafauna unmegafauna to turn into normal fauna. Now we're trying to meet re-megafauna the fauna.
Yeah,
it's like
definitely got a lot of meat off a mastodon or a mammoth back in the day.
Oh, sure. Definitely fed the village for.
Yeah, you'd be having a party. End.
And I mean, we are definitely a very impressive species on that account, and we're definitely the most egotistical species on that account too, because we'll kill a species and we're just like, let's bring it back for round two. humans cause dodos to go extinct and we're like, let's bring them back, and I'm sure the dodos are like, please don't. We know you're gonna eat us.
Oh man. Yep.
I mean, talking about time scales too is insane, because it's like there's so much time, yet things all happened in like so close together, which is really weird. Because you're like, oh, we have all this time. And then you're like, yeah, but mammoths were around during Egypt.
Yeah, that's the crazy part.
What?
Yeah.
Like dodos went extinct like really recently. I think it was like the 1700s that they went extinct.
Oh, super. Yeah, like blink of an eye. I just missed them.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, what is going on? I mean, you're telling me King Tut could have went and pet a mammoth?
Yeah. It is like about those worlds evolving together like that, man. Well, as the mammoths were kind of shutting down on Wrangell Island up there and stuff, but
because I mean, one of the prime theories is that they just kind of didn't have a big enough gene pool. So they kind of just inbred weirdly and they stopped being mammoths.
Yeah, I think the island wasn't quite big enough to support a genetically diverse population and stuff, so then they ended themselves a little bit.
And I want to believe that there was only that. I believe, let me think it, hang on, what am I trying to say here? I believe there was only like 500 or so original mammoths that got onto the island before it became an island. So it's like, that's not enough to kind of keep a species alive.
Yeah, that I had heard another study that came out of the Yukon that was talking about how they found like traces of DNA in the permafrost that were like dated to like 5,000-6,000 years, but I wasn't totally sure on the validity of that study. But I mean, I totally think a lot of the megafauna probably stuck around a lot longer, or maybe not a lot longer, but longer than we would think. just because, I mean, there's no way they all went like right at 10,000 years ago or whatever.
Definitely.
But yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, definitely something happened though that made them all start to wind down and kind of made everything go extinct, at least in North America. That was like in generally roughly the size of a little bit, anything bigger than a German Shepherd went extinct, with the exception of like a few, you know, elk and bison and stuff. But yeah, no, crazy stuff.
And I mean, I would actually like to visit that island and see what kind of mammoth bones you find, because it sounds horrible that they had to like, that, well, they didn't have to, I mean, but they like kind of started to inbreed. But it's also like, what kind of unique mammoth bones do you find from that?
Oh.
What like odd deformity do they get, mm-hmm, after like how many ever years of just basically inbreeding? Were the like tusks bigger? Was there like something else going on? It's like, I want to see some of these bones to see, yeah, what weird, unique creatures were going on.
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure if they ever found anything like that, but I know, I think, like, I mean, their DNA was getting all really, really bad, and it was, yeah, probably off important traits or screwing up their ability to process stuff or making them immune or making them susceptible to disease or something. Yeah, for sure. It wasn't a good time to be a mammoth.
And I'm sure if mammoths were on that island, there was other stuff that got on the island. Like, I'm sure there were predators on the island that hunted mammoths. I mean, I'm sure there were other herbivore-like creatures that made it onto the island that went just alongside the mammoths. I mean, it couldn't have just been mammoths. That would have been rather interesting. Like, yeah, a very, very convenient.
Yeah, islands do some weird stuff to animals. I mean, there's some islands off the coast of California where they had, I guess, the Columbia mammoths swam out there, and then they became like little mini mammoths back in the Ice Age too. But yeah, islands can do some weird stuff to large animals.
Because it's like it's just the separation of like basically genetic diversity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can see it in like people and other things. Like you just look at like cultures from around the world. Like, look how different the Europeans are from the Asians and the Africans and like Native Americans. And like, just look how different cultures are from around the world. It's the same thing, which also makes me think, we're like, did mammoths have like a hierarchy like that where they're like, oh, well, we're bigger mammoths, so we think we're better than these mammoths. So, I mean, it's like,
probably the bulls would spar and stuff and fight each other. And it was, I guess, whoever's the toughest one, and whoever was still standing, is the one that ended up on top. I want to say there's a site in Nebraska where you've probably heard of it. They found the two bull Columbia mammoths with the tusks locked. From sparring, kind of like white-tailed deer do nowadays. They just get locked up. But
I wonder how they died. Like, did they just both like bonk, concussion, fall over, die? It's like, how did that happen? How do we find them locked together?
Locked, like they got stuck. The tusks were stuck, and then they couldn't eat or drink. And then they just probably starved to death or whatever, or just died of thirst.
That's horrible.
Yeah, really rough way to go. There wasn't good deaths back in the Pleistocene.
Bonk. Oh, well, I guess we're stuck like this.
Yeah, you weren't dying of old age back then, that's for sure.
So how's your day? It's going fine until I got locked together with you.
I know, and then you just kind of lay down and wait for the pack of dire wolves to come get you or something, or the swordfish get you.
I'm sure that they weren't just gonna die from starvation instantly. I mean, they probably were hunted by predators that just picked them off for being tired and weak.
A crew for sure.
So, I mean, I mean, do you have any questions for me or anything else? I mean,
no, I mean, this has been super cool. It's dope to talk to somebody that really cares about this stuff too, and I guess, yeah, love sharing my, I guess, my unique perspective and stuff, a little more Pleistocene stuff. But, I mean, yeah, you're in a great area out there. You should definitely get on good creeks or
something.
You gotta
find some rivers or lakes or something and just go wading through them.
Yeah, go walk through them. You'll get some bones eventually, for sure. Well, yeah, man, it's been great talking. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for coming on, man. I always enjoy having people that enjoy talking about the prehistoric world and ancient creatures and just talk about what they know, what they have, what they got going on. I mean, it's just always fun to share the experience. Well, I mean, so I'm going to let you go. I mean, I'm sure you got stuff you got to do, so.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it, man. Yeah, happy anytime to sit down for a chat. Really appreciated it.
And let's see, there it is. That way. there's his Instagram for anybody who wants to check it out. He's got a lot of amazing content on there of fossils and whatnot that he has found. You can kind of see the ground sloth right there. If anybody's interested in checking that out. Just going to do a little scroll through. A lot of molars.
Lots of mastodons.
There we go. Lots of mastodon teeth. Mm-hmm.
Big tusk. Yeah, there's the tusk.
A big skull. I mean.
Bison. Yep.
So if any of you find that interesting, I really suggest going and checking out his Instagram. Well, I mean, I'm going to let you go. And I definitely am going to stay in touch. I mean.
Absolutely.
Hopefully have another interview or have something else to bring up to talk about. And if you ever want to just come on the show to talk about anything, feel free to hit me up and just be like, mind come if I come on the show one day. I mean, I always love having guests on. It's one of my favorite things. I mean, hopefully I don't run out of people to talk to.
Well, yeah, man, I'd love to come on again. I really appreciate it. It was good talking to you.
And I mean, I guess I'll see you later and talk to you later.
All right. We'll keep in touch. Good to hear from you. Take it easy.
You too. Bye, man.
Bye-bye.
So he's gone now. I don't know why I was pointing. That was Dylan from Midwestern Fossils. And before we go, you know I got to do the outro and all that. But first, again, our sponsorship from Dinosaur Trips. $250 off if you tell them that you heard about them from Prehistoric Life Podcast. So there's their Instagram. And if you want the website, where was it? I always have the Utah and Colorado one pulled up because you guys know I'm a sucker for the Jurassic. So there's Red Rocks and Raptors. That's the one that I personally – it's also the one that Dr. Brian Curtis is leading that I really wish I could go on. His name right there, Dr. Brian Curtis. Real good friend. So, yeah, go check that out too. That way. Go check that out too if you're interested. And like I mentioned earlier, coming up, I'm going to just make the announcement now. Coming up, I'm going to try to do every Friday. There's going to be a tournament or a battle episode, a fight episode. Because I used to do Fight Friday kind of things where I do dinosaur clashes, but I'm going to kind of run a tournament for the next couple months. Probably it's probably going to be a couple months that I get this done until I get this done, but I'm gonna try to do that every Friday. Yeah, and there's some dinosaurs on there that I have not done, and there are some dinosaurs, a lot of them are ones that I've done. There's a lot that I haven't, I say a lot, but it was like three, and surprisingly I didn't have Majungasaurus like I talked about earlier, Rip of Rivenator in there, and I have to do those before I can do the fight so I can get all the data and stuff. But yeah, I mean, again, Dylan, thank you so much for coming on. Always an honor having anybody on that likes talking about this stuff. If you want more content from me, like that post that I made on my story, go check out the, I guess it would be that way, the Prehistoric Life Podcast Instagram page. I do a lot of exclusive content on there. I do reels about the people that I've interviewed, things like that. Pictures from episodes, events that I went to, dinosaurs coming up, things like that. That's where you, if you know, you figured out about the tournament coming up. I forgot what it was called. So go check that out. And if you want my content a little bit early, I try to post it a little bit earlier on the Instagram. On the YouTube page, there's the YouTube page. There's Sky. We did an interview with her. I think she was the last interview I did before this one. So go check out that interview too. It was about the Mother's Day site, but there's my YouTube. I try to post everything a little bit early on there, earlier on there. And if you want that all in one place, remember, go check out the Prehistoric Life podcast website. You got the YouTube and the Instagram right there, and you have all the episodes. And if you scroll all the way to the bottom, you got the Instagram page again. But yeah, there it is. Go check that out. But till next time, I'm your host, Eric Crawford, signing off. This has been Prehistoric Life podcast. Again, Dylan, thank you so much for coming on. It was a true honor having you on, but I'm your host, Eric Crawford, signing off. I will see you all next time. And remember, keep it prehistoric. Goodbye. We'll be right back.